This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
The Sider family got caught because of a random misdemeanor warrant because dad couldn't keep his pants on around the neighbors, allegedly. Oh, that's it. That's the entire safety net that worked. The store employees noticed. The neighbors were feet away. Nobody called. And here's the uncomfortable premise. Psychotherapist Siobhan Scott is here to walk us through. This case is not rare. Families like this exist in every state, every county, seen and unseen at the same time. This next part here is about the psychology of everyone on the outside, why we notice and do nothing, and how many of these houses we've walked past. Is it really that, though? Is it really that we say we do nothing, or is it more so societal because we know if we say something, we see something, we say something, nothing happens? That seems to be more of what it has been. And then why expose ourselves? Why waste the time? Why do this when you report it and it goes absolutely nowhere? A lot of attention being brought on the people who saw him at the Dollar General or here or there. I mean, do the people who saw these folks and smelled them and felt the despair and saw those kids? And when I see kids like this at the store, I mean, it's heartbreaking. And my immediate reaction is they're effed. They are completely effed if these are the parents that they have. But I know there's absolutely nothing I can do by walking past them at the Dollar General or the Walmart or wherever that will help these kids or save these kids from the absolute shit, horrible decision-making mutant parents that they have. That seems to be the reality that we live in, is we like to pretend we're saying something and seeing something and doing something, but the doing something is the part that never really goes on, or if it does, it's very half-assed, and then the system is designed to put the kids back with abusers. That seems to be our problem here. We have no place to put them. So the convenient thing is, well, let's just try and hope to God mom and dad change their ways. And they never do. And it's just cycle and it just goes on and on and on and on.
You know, the person I'd like to have a conversation with is the obstetrician. She gave birth in the hospital. First thing when I heard the story, I thought she must have had all these babies at home. But no, she gave birth in the hospital. And if you're an obstetrician and you have a young woman in her 20s, early 30s, and you're saying, how many births have you had? You know, this is your 13th, your 14th, your 15th. Don't you ask some questions at that point? You know, this is so far out of the normal of human behavior. And I guess that this is a hospital that was too small to have a funded social work position, you know? But isn't this a family where even at that level, at the medical level, people would have been alarmed and been looking at this closely and asking questions? And it doesn't seem like that happened.
But is there, I guess my question to you, is there anything that they could have done? I mean, I would have to guess that after all these births in this hospital that people, you know, on the side are like, oh my God, she's back again. And there's chatter amongst like, oh, this is, you know, and there's chatter, but is there truly anything that they could have done? I don't know the answer to that.
I like to think in a functional public health system, functional public health system.
Yes.
And I have
word functional.
Right. I have seen this happen at some times. If there's a family where there are questions, where there are concerns, you don't even necessarily need to open a CPS file, but you can make a request that a public health nurse go out to the home and check on the family. You know, how is mom doing postpartum? And I think, you know, when we're looking at systemic changes, why doesn't that happen with every birth, where there's just a follow-up visit from a public health nurse a few months down, weeks or months down the road? How is everybody doing? You know, you would catch postpartum depression that way. You could catch people who are, you know, inadequately nourished. You could certainly catch these hoarding households, but I think a visit, a home visit would be a good thing.
I hope to bring a little more to the conversation. I haven't had a chance to talk to my daughter yet, who is a labor and delivery nurse. And so she sees, she is so insightful on this kind of stuff. And I just haven't had a chance to talk to her. She's been working nonstop since this broke. So I plan on asking her about what she do in this situation. What do her colleagues do? Because I know they are so attentive to people like this. I've just heard stories. I just know her. I know her colleagues. They are so, I've never seen more passionate people about what they do in the world. So it's a good question.
Well, I mean, it's one thing to catch these things. And I don't even feel like these things weren't caught. This is out in the open. I mean, the people caught these things. It's just there's nothing that happens when they are caught. I mean, it's like, what do you do? Okay, we've determined there's a house with 16 children. Who wants to adopt the kids that can't speak, that are, you know, feral? Like, what do you do with it? What do you do with these poor souls that are the victims of their circumstance? I mean, we don't seem to have a very good plan in place for any of that. We have a lot of talk of we're going to catch this, we're going to do that, but then it's like, okay, now what do we do next? Mm-hmm. and that's where we seem to be stuck. Why are we stuck there, Siobhan? Why are we so stuck there as a society where it's like, here's how our system is broken. Here's where we bring these problems on a silver platter to the attention of society, and it's like, we got no real way to deal with this. And we never seem to like legislate anything or do anything to fix this massive problem in our society, which is then systemic of all of the other problems that end up coming into our society when we end up, people end up becoming adults and they can't function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I think, a place where you and I often get to. It's like, hey, we're great at identifying the problems, but what the hell do you do about it?
Yeah.
And we run into it. I live in Portland, Oregon, and we've got a big, as most major urban areas do, we've got a big problem with unhoused folks, mentally ill folks, addicted to drug folks, and a lot of pregnant, unhoused, mentally ill, addicted folks who are living, you know, under the bridge.
Yeah.
And everybody throws their hands up. What can we do? What can we do? And we go around and around and around with trying to come up with solutions and trying to get people into treatment, but they don't want treatment. And I think we have a country built on the concept of freedom, right? Mm-hmm. And we take that to an extreme degree, that people are free to eat out of trash cans if they want to. Are they free to feed their children out of trash cans if they want to? Are they free to raise children and live under a bridge somewhere? And I think that's where a lot of this gets stuck, is that we don't want the, you know, you'll hear so many times political speeches, we don't want the government. We don't want the government controlling us. We don't want the government monitoring us. That's a communist system or whatever, you know. It's like this idea of freedom. Well, there are people that can't manage life, and they should not be bringing kids into unsafe, awful situations. And I think it's something, is it uniquely American? I don't know. We may struggle with it more than other countries do because we have such an emphasis on personal freedom here.
Do we need to revisit? I mean, there are obviously, you know, group homes and essentially orphanages and things of that nature that exists in the world. And we think back to many, many old days where in state hospitals and things of that nature that were not run well. And I know we've had this conversation 1,000 times, too. But for the sake of the story, we should touch it again. Do we need to revisit some of these things on a massive scale again, where we do have massive campuses that exist for state hospital care for people who truly need it, or for children who are in homes like this, where it's certainly not the best situation where you got the parents there and it's a lovely family, but the state hospital home or the state orphanage home is still better than this. Yeah. I feel like we could do better in a lot of these areas, but we don't want to touch them because, oh, well, that was real icky back then. It wasn't. Yeah, well, we could do better. We could totally revisit this stuff. We could create a safer environment. And yes, they're all ripe for abuse. They always have been. They always will be. That's why you have oversight and you fix it. We don't just keep going, well, it could go wrong this way. Well, guess what? Out in society, it already is going 10 times worse. So it may not be the best, but it's better than that. And we can do this, but we, for whatever reason, we always seem to be telling ourselves that we can't. Yeah. And we have to just stick with the status quo, which clearly has not been working out very well. Is there anything going on in this world, in our country, in systems like that to bring some of those things back or to rebuild or start from scratch with a new concept in those veins that would better serve children, especially in these sort of environments? Because right now it's just shuffle the kids around from one random home to the next in most cases for until those parents go, oh shit, I didn't know it was going to be difficult raising a child with mental health problems because of the shitholes they came out of. And then they get sent to the next home, and then abuse happens along the way. And we're just like, oh, well, we did our best. We don't do anything right. We can't seem to figure these problems out, even though they're staring us in the face every damn day.
And, you know, residential treatment, therapeutic residential treatment programs do exist for kids. And we have some for mentally ill adults as well. We don't have nearly enough. And so you don't need this gigantic, big institutional orphanage, but we do need programs that are smaller, that are based in homes, large homes, where you have a team of, it's not just a husband and wife, but you have a team of people who rotate in throughout the day and throughout the night, rotating staff who are well-trained, educated. You have therapists, you know, that work there as well. Treatment plans for every kid. Kids' needs are met. So we do know how to do those things, but the problem is funding those things. And do taxpayers prioritize that we do need to build a better system of, I'll call it residential care, you know, rather than institutionalizing people. But where if you're an adult and you're living out under a bridge and you're rolling in the dirt and screaming because you can't stop using meth, that we can look at that and say, you know, as a society, we need to do better for that person, because this is not a person who can make a choice. You know, they're too mentally ill. And can we come up with a better living situation for them and enact that? You know, this is called assisted outpatient treatment, is happening in some states. It needs to happen more and it needs to be funded more. But where you can say, you know, this idea about personal freedom, this is a great concept, but some people are clearly not able to manage it and they are having kids. And we do need more residential care for folks.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've been distracted trying to do all the research since you're talking about fixes. What popped in my mind is we keep seeing all these overhauls of all these other shiny programs all over the place. And so I was curious, when was the last time there's a real overhaul of any of the programs associated with this? The empty air I'm coming to is pretty interesting. Like they updated their homeschooling program. No extra funding.
They downgraded basically in terms.
Yeah, because I was curious, you know, are we, because I am a root cause guy. You know, what root cause can prevent, you know, it's like yesterday when we were talking, Tony was like, you know, people and politicians and everyone keeps coming up with Band-Aids, but Band-Aids don't fix the problem. Band-Aids mask it till the next election, so it can be a nice slogan for people. But is anyone doing anything? You know, you don't have to like the politics of it, but Rudy Giuliani, way back when I first got assigned New York in the FBI, first thing he did to overhaul crime in the city was he got rid of squeegees, you know, the squeegee guys. Because if you take care of the grassroots level it then will spring from there and then crime will go down. You know, that was the theory and it worked out pretty good. And then Bloomberg took it over. And then so since then, they did the same thing. Like, let's go at the root cause. And so yesterday we talked about the root cause. What kind of things, instead of Band-Aids with all these things after it's already had them, very reactively, what can we do proactively when they're really small, really young? Like, that's why I asked Siobhan about the camp thing. You know, what kind of new programs at that grassroots level can get in there to prevent all these things from happening? And I've researched, has anything been done in that area?
No.
No. You know, so there, again, people keep pouring slogans at Band-Aids, but it's still not fixing these problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to throw this. I mean, because I know you said, you know, the taxpayers need to give a shit enough to do anything. Is it that the taxpayers don't care, or is it that the legislature doesn't bring any ideas either, and that they don't want to go there, and that there may be other forces at play here that don't want to be examined, that are enjoying the system as is? I mean, who's benefiting from any of this, I guess, would be the question. Who's benefiting from a broken child welfare system? Predators? Mm-hmm. Is that our answer? I mean, at the end of the day, this doesn't seem to be that I don't know. I don't think any of these fixes are like rocket science. We just don't do them.
Yeah.
Who's being incentivized? Who's enjoying the system being as broken as it is and basically a clearinghouse for broken children? Predators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, here's what I think is another problem with it is that, you know, so here we are. We're compassionate, caring people on our show. All our contributors are. And we're critical thinkers. But when you look at people that get elected, not all of them, you know, but in general, you don't have that kind of, because I don't, like my years ago, people said, Robin, do you ever want to run for politics out of the FBI? I said, what are you, nuts? No. You know, but to be a decision maker and that can actually redirect funds and attack, you know, the core root of things, you actually have to be a critical thinker and actually look at cause and effect. I mean, we have a big employment issue, understaffing in critical jobs. I mean, just think about what one small program of exposing kids to good, healthy behaviors at a young age could do for everything in this country or everything in the world. Yet it doesn't, and it's not rocket science, like we keep saying, but no one has the willingness to just make a shift. And I don't care. Both parties, you know, claim this, you know, so just do something. It is such a small, minute fix to just, instead of treating the cut with a Band-Aid, just don't have that little nick hurt that's going to get infected, because that's exactly what keeps happening in every single one of these cases. It's just infuriating.
And it takes me back, this thing about, yes, Robin, you should run for office. We would all love that. We'd vote for you. But but we didn't even have a federal law against child abuse until 1974. And so, you know, when we look for solutions from politicians, I mean, I think they need to hear from a lot of people that this matters to us. And we want the welfare of kids to take priority, because even if it costs money up front, it's going to save so much down the road.
It's so mind-blowing. I mean, you want to save taxpayer dollars? You want to save money to do big projects? Absolutely. How do you do it? You don't pay for $1 million of Band-Aids. You just spend a couple hundred thousand, or even just a couple thousand, to just create a program here. I mean, because the net is going to be, would be wide. Would you catch everyone in that net? No. But if you, I'm just think about, if you look at those numbers, we're talking, what number did I give out? 500,000, something like that? If you just think about the impact, if you could create one program with a couple thousand dollars that makes a 10% difference, that is 100,000 kids, and that's only 10% difference. The likelihood of it being greater, even more. That's 100,000 kids that just are better off today than they would have been otherwise.
We have to, as a society in our country, we have to have a society saying, you know what? Not everybody deserves to have complete autonomy and freedom to do whatever you want. Eat out of the garbage can and then feed your kids out of the garbage can.
And then manifest in things like Nick Reiner.
Yeah, I mean, you need, we need a society that says, you know what? you're not healthy, you're a danger to yourself and others, and because we're sane and we're not idiots, we'd like to help you. We don't want you to not have any autonomy here forever, but we need to help get you there. And the only way to get you there is by stepping in and saying, you can't take care of yourself right now. If you see an injured animal on the street or something like that, you want to care for it. We're more caring about an injured dog than we are the people. And all in the name of freedom. And people don't seem to understand the difference between, you know, freedom and actual care.
Compassion.
Compassionate care for other people. It is not compassionate. It is not caring to let people live in their own squalor who are incapable of getting out of it. That is the exact opposite.
Because compassion is empathy plus action. Yep. And that equals compassion. And I mean, I served my country for many, many years, like my entire life. And I'm a big freedom guy. I love our Constitution. Yep. It gives a lot of freedoms. But freedom without compassion, what the hell's the point?
Good point.
Exactly. We'll wrap on that. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube.
Robin Drake running for president.
Yeah, that's what I saw. I should never have said that. My loving critic, as you all know, or Kim, would have a problem with it, I think.
I would too. You can't leave this show, even if it serves your country more.
But can you imagine the viewers you'd get?
Hey. Your thoughts, comment section. All right. Siobhan's book, Nightbird, available wherever you get books. Also, audiobook. Please
read it multiple
times,
too. You get something every time you read it.
Yeah. Her story, extremely powerful, especially on this topic here, too. And Robin's It's Not All About Me, his latest, available wherever you get books and audiobooks. Leave a review on Amazon and go check that out. Until next time, for Robin, for Siobhan, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.